Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Are you guys big rain people? You like rain? It's raining outside, obviously. If you're listening to us, you know that. But are you big on rain?
I like rain, the amount of rain we get here in Las Vegas. You know, then you can really enjoy it. You have a nice lazy day. But I don't want to live in Seattle.
Right. Yo, so I know you. You have Vegas ties. Griffin, where are you from? Like, what's your...
Kind of Utah. Born in Utah, but moved a lot, me and my family, between Utah, California, Vegas, obviously. So, kind of...
Did you live in any, like, weather environments?
Oh, yeah. Yeah? Lived in Salt Lake City, where get all the seasons. Lived in Arizona, where there's one season. Just like here in Vegas. I've experienced a couple different landscapes.
Okay, all right. I'm big on rain. And maybe because, like you, we don't really get it that often.
Right.
So every time it comes around, like, I'm down the clown, you know?
Puts me in a great mood.
It's
way better than the different where we are experiencing just the sun beating us for 24/7 throughout the week. So I don't mind the rain one bit.
It was a pleasant surprise when I saw my weather app yesterday. And I was like, oh, it's going to rain, like, today and tomorrow. I'm totally down with this. This is the crappy millennial thing that I have actually started to enjoy. This is going to be so embarrassing. I'm going to admit this on the air. So I have TikTok. That's not the embarrassing part. There's like this new trend now on TikTok where it'll show you like these different like AI generated what's the word I'm looking for here? Like bedrooms or hotels or houses. And it's like, which would you prefer to stay in? You know what I mean? And it's like, I dig the vibe of all these like cloudy, rainy, like window overlooking like a forest garbage. Like, I'm all in on that.
Every bedroom has like its own little fireplace. Pelts all over the wall. Yeah, I see. This is supposed to be a good move, man. Yeah. I love those videos.
All right, let's do it.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents The Big Four at Four. Number four.
All right, as Cofield calls him, does he call him Big Rog? I think Roger Goodell was with our commander in chief earlier today, made an announcement. The District of Columbia will be the site of the 2027 NFL Draft. The expectation, and this is going to be held at the National Mall. Is that what it's called? I didn't know that's what they called that, by the way.
I thought it would have a more official name. But yeah, just National Mall.
Right, which is just the area in front of the White House, it looks like. Again, I apologize. I'm not like up, I guess, on my country's geography or whatever. But either way, the 2027 NFL Draft will be held there, Alex. And they expect over 1 million fans to attend?
Are we getting out of control here with the drafts and the people there? Or, I mean, the rendering looks awesome if you go to ESPN and you see it. So it's a great, great look, but that's a lot.
The NFL draft in Green Bay drew an estimated 600,000 attendees over 3 days. So the expectation is, obviously, this is 2025. 2026, I believe, is in Pittsburgh, if I remember correctly. And then 2027, obviously, in Washington, D.C. So I guess if you're trending in terms of growth, you get there. But, I mean, I was watching – in these last few years I've watched, I've never – like, I've enjoyed the draft, but making a trip around to the draft and going out there just to see people's names get called, I mean, I guess the NFL is that big of a monster, but 1 million people they expect?
That is why the NFL is king, because they have found a way to market and to make all of these things so big. But I agree with you. I wouldn't travel to go do this.
Or to a better city. I don't know. Maybe Washington, D.C. is like popping, but is it?
I've actually covered a couple of the NFL drafts, and I could tell you, like, I love the draft. I love, as a football fan, I've always loved watching it. I always loved even watching it and seeing the big crowds of all the different teams in the stands and everything. But I also, at the same time, being there physically, I'm like, it is not the most fun sporting event to go to. I'm not going to lie. It's very good for you to dress up as a bear, dress up as a lion, dress up as whatever your team's mascot is, and scream and shout for a guy you have no idea who he is. But I mean, I feel like there's just way better events to attend than the draft.
I'm also, I'm not well traveled, but DC doesn't strike me as a party town.
No.
Hey, let's go rally the troops when we're done here, and let's go hit the town. Let's get into some debauchery.
It seems like I don't know. For me, it seems like a place. If even if I was there on vacation, I'd be like, hey, man, the White House is here. President's here. It's serious business here. There ain't no joking around here.
We're going to go take a tour of like the Smithsonian in between times. You know what I mean? Like, let's go. Let's go run miles up and down the steps for Abe Lincoln. Let's go do that.
Number three.
All right. So pictures have surfaced of Aaron Rodgers. He is still alive. I don't think there's really any question about that. But there was a video of him at some sort of red carpet, and he has what looks to be a wedding ring on, Alex.
Very interesting, because, I mean, his relationships in the past were very much out in the open, and we haven't heard anything about this.
That's what I was going to ask, was do we know who he's, like, is he with somebody?
So, for what we know about this, Aaron Rodgers had his appearance on the Pat McAfee show a little bit ago, and he was explaining why there was such a delay in his decision. He said that, you know, he has people relying on him. He's got a relationship that he's, you know, really dedicated to. Didn't say names. There's no reports out who he could be, you know, allegedly dating. But I thought it was interesting to see him. I think the event was he was at the Kentucky Derby. And it was the event leading up to it. And yeah, with the wedding ring on, I mean, as fans, I don't think this should be anything. Nobody should be getting excited or downhearted about it. But as a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise, I'd be livid.
Well, okay, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you can sign with the Steelers and end this whole narrative and story and still do what you need to do in a personal standpoint in the offseason. Can you not?
It's as simple as a phone call, I would think. Like, hey, I'm in. Let's do it.
There's technology. There's fax machines. Get your agent to work it out. Sign the paperwork. And you can still do everything you need to do.
That doesn't work for Aaron Rodgers, though.
I mean, and that's exactly. That's it. Mm-hmm. He's got to still be the center of attention.
That's right.
There's really no other. There's no explaining why we're still here at this point right now. Clearly, the Steelers are keeping a spot open for him. Clearly, he wants to go there. But we have to keep talking about this because it's him. And then he's going to sit back and go, I just don't know why. We just keep focusing on me. Who can explain it? Like, dude, you do this.
Nobody's better. Nobody's better at keeping the limelight on themselves. And yeah, I mean, I hope for the best for Rodgers. I hope he's in a great spot in his life. But, you know, looking back at his dating history, you know, the man's dating history, it merges into his professional life here and there. So got to be careful with that.
Number two.
You know, when you do something wrong, got to get punished. And good enough punishments, you will learn your lesson. And I think Shrome Moore and Michigan are definitely learning their lesson here. Michigan has decided to apparently suspend him for 2 games for the upcoming season. Good. I mean, that's a really big blow, because if you look at the beginning of the season, you're talking about New Mexico and Oklahoma. That is a very big non-conference matchup. So it's actually pretty, you know, oniony of Michigan to do the right thing and suspend Shrome Moore for the first 2 games of the season.
I mean, you think they are just doing this out of the kindness of their hearts, out of the, you know, out of the honor they have as a program?
Sure. If I was being serious, they're not suspending him for the first 2 games. They're suspending him for weeks 3 and 4, because you can't miss the Oklahoma game. Then what's the point of the punishment?
That is very true.
Of course, like, you're suspended for 2 games, but the 2 we need you for, namely one of them, you're actually going to be able to coach. It's weeks 3 and 4 that we are going to be able to put you on the sideline for Central Michigan and Nebraska. Wow. Which, granted, Nebraska is the conference game. But between Nebraska and a road game against Oklahoma, one ring, you know, probably has a little bit more to it. I mean, come on.
Not to mention, I mean, the timing, and Griffin can speak to this, but you get the ball rolling, right, as the head coach and put everything in place, and then you kind of say, okay, I'm going to step away for these next couple days or next couple games, and it's not really that as big of a deal as it would have been game 1 and 2. I was wondering what happened, though, because we haven't heard anything about this for, what, a year and a half? So just kind of coming up out of nowhere with the final punishment here.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, with a college program, you're right. Honestly, regardless of who your week 1 or week 0 opponent is, a coach is going to want to be there. He's going to want to get the ball rolling against regardless of opponent, because that the first game is where you see, okay, how does everybody look in the scheme? How is the offense moving? How's the defense reacting? It's smart on their part to not put the program at risk.
It rings so hollow. Like, just don't suspend him. Who cares?
Yeah.
Because again, it's like, what do we What punishment are you really serving here? We're going to suspend you, but it's not going to be for the games of actual merit that really does impact the big picture.
Hey, we got to punish you somehow. We got to get something on the books to make sure that we take accountability. But don't worry, we're not going to put the season at risk. You're good.
Number one.
So we opened up the show talking about, you know, the chastising of NHL fans. Our postseason's better. We actually saw a lot of that this year as well when it came to the All-Star break. Now, I am a very big proponent of, like, to talk about sports media a little bit. I think sports media at times is very, very lazy. And one of the very lazy things that sports media does is coming out of the NBA All-Star break, because there's nothing else going on, they will then just talk about the NBA All-Star game and how it's a problem and how you have to fix it. It's every year. Just lock, stock, and barrel every year. Just go, go, go. We're going to complain about the NBA All-Star game. We're going to complain about the NBA All-Star game. Keep in mind that none of you actually cared about the sanctity of any All-Star game, but it's because of where it falls in the calendar. We don't have these group thinks about the NFL All-Stars, celebrities, ceremonies, which have become flag football. Absolutely insane. The NHL, before the Four Nations face-off, was like a 3-on-3 tournament or whatever it was. They were changing everything around. But the reason why I bring this up is because this last All-Star break, they elected for the Four Nations face-off. It was a rousing success. We were actually just talking about this off the air. Ratings in the 16 millions in North America for the championship game between USA and Canada. It was great. I watched it. The NHL has decided to pivot to international competition instead of the All-Star game in 2026, according to reports. Do we like this?
I do and I don't, because it was awesome this past year, but I just think you're going to overdo it if you do it year in and year out. And it made it so special because we hadn't seen it in so long and we wanted to see USA versus Canada. So that's my worry here.
Well, I mean, I get your point that, you know, you overdo it. You rely too much on the one thing that worked that one year. It could, you know, not be very sustainable. But then again, it's like, okay, so how do we either adjust the masses' mindset on what All-Star games are for these pro leagues and what they're supposed to be, and or how, where do we find the nice medium where we're like, okay, this is the format we're going to do. It gives everybody what they want. It gives the event that big feeling for the fans. It gives us the ratings we need. Like, what is that solution?
I don't know, because I find myself agreeing with Alex, which is part of the reason why the Four Nations was so successful was the novelty of it. We are going to see NHL stars in the Winter Olympics for the first time since, 2014, I think, right? Yeah. We haven't seen that since. So we hadn't seen real international competition with all of these guys for a long time. And so that novelty was absolutely tremendous. But now you're going to do that again. The year that you have the Winter Olympics, by the way, so you're going to get the Four Nations and you're going to have to play, and then you're going to play in the Winter Olympics as well. I felt like the novelty was a really big reason why it was so successful. And then to do that again the next year and have the Winter Olympics come up later that year, I don't know, just like altogether, it seems kind of odd.
Yeah, but I mean, I get like when the Four Nations was going on and we were talking about, you know, America versus Canada, and then it also helped that, you know, everything with the terrorists was going on with our government and Canada. So, I mean, that could have added to it as well. But I mean, the sense of nations going against each other and international, you know, country versus country, I feel like there is a draw there that, you know, maybe not for an entire All-Star game, but something with it.
All right. Well, either way, it was very enjoyable. So we'll see if that is something that can be successful. But it is a busy winter for NHL stars in general, because that is actually it. All right. When we come back, I want more on legacy. Somebody's escaping. It is somebody's fault that the Clippers got smoked, and I don't think it's who you think it is.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
No Steve Cofield today. John Montoble, Alex White, and Griffin all here running the show. I have no idea when Steve will be back. Who cares? Be quite honest. So, I think most people that are familiar with me know by now, I am a Clippers fan. As somebody who was born in lovely Southern California, I decided to be a person of class and choose to root for the teams that I thought would bring me character when they succeeded at the ultimate goal. So I am an Angels and Clippers fan. That has gone well. Those choices have gone well. It's been great. So we watched the Clippers over the weekend. Just, why are you laughing?
I was just going to say, man, that's the life you picked?
Yeah,
that's
the life I picked.
That's the life you, all right, all righty.
It's the life I picked. It's been great. It's been great. Angels fans are, the Angels are awful. It's been terrible.
But you know what? You know what? I'm very interested in your Clipper fandom ever since I've met you. You know, knowing that you're a Clippers fan, Indiana Colts fan was way out of.
So that, yeah. So that is like young John Von Tobel, where just like everybody else, like you like the NFL really quickly, or at least most people I learned. So you pick the team, dude. When I'm like 10, Peyton Manning's like he's the nuts, and I'm like, yeah, I like this team. And but then once I became a mature sports fan, then I realized, like, no, I have to root. So that Colts fandom always stuck. But then I had to root. I had to, like, no, you have to root for the teams in which you are tied to. Right? Mm. And I was like, well, people always pick where they're from, so I'll do this. And when I was a kid, too, you know, cable, whatever, like, we always got the Angels games for whatever reason. I was born out there, so I'm like, let's do this. I watched Clippers and Angels games just because they were on. I'm from there. Boom. Let's go.
Well, I'm happy that they gave you a little something to smile about this postseason.
Yeah. So here's the thing. That team sucks. So the Clippers get smoked. Absolute no-show in Game 7 against the Nuggets. By the way, you saw it coming from a mile away. Like, I talked to that anytime I would do a hit, whatever it was, from Game 6 on. After Game 5, my response for Game 6 and for Game 7 was, you cannot trust them. I think they are capable of doing it, but you cannot trust the Clippers. They do it in Game 6. They fall flat in Game 7. So everybody wants to pile Alex on James Harden. It's the low-hanging fruit. It's easy to do it. You look at some of the numbers for Harden. In Game 7s since 2020, it's not like he's played in 20 of them. 13.8 points per game, shooting less than 30% from the floor, less than 20% from three, in 41 minutes per game. He has shot below 30% from the floor in each of the Game 7s he's played over the last 5 years. He only had 7 points on 8 shot attempts. How much of it is his fault?
I have a feeling you're going to tell me it is not just his fault, and you're looking at someone else. I'm always the person that's like, this is the Game 7. Come on, James Harden, prove him wrong. Why does it happen year in and year out?
Well, that is a real question to be answered. Like, that's weird, right? I mean, it is a thing. James Harden not showing up in the later portions of series has been a thing throughout his entire career. For whatever it is, and I'm always one, you know, you have power ratings and numbers as well. Like, I like to kind of be cold, like, calculated numbers and all these sort of things. Sometimes in a thing like sports, weird things happen, and that weird thing is that sometimes guys just can't show up in the moments that it's needed. And it seems like that's the case with him.
And it's really important to factor that in when it comes to power ratings, because I got burned for a while with just going strictly numbers when it came to postseason, and that is the time where you really have to trust more of the feel and the other 25% that goes into it, like you're talking about with Harden.
But what I wanted to ask here, and talking about, you know, the share of blame, because I watched, you know, like all of us, watched this entire series. There were multiple games where this Clippers team just showed up with zero energy. Like, you would think it was the second leg of a back-to-back on a Wednesday in January, instead of it being a best-of-seven series in the postseason with the ability to move on and potentially win an NBA Finals. And, you know, Griffin, you played sports at a higher level. Was there, or maybe you were him, who was your leader? You don't have to name me a name, but can you think of somebody on the field that was your emotional leader of sorts? That generally people look to or set a tone of some sort that led by some sort of an example that at least kept you guys at a certain level emotionally, or that generally the group gravitated toward to keep them as well as they could on the right path?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, there was a lot of teams I was on where that leadership role was lacking.
Right.
From both coach, captain, player, whatever. I've been on teams where that position was lacking. Then I've been on other positions where, whether it was a coach or a team captain or even just an older guy on the team, the ones who had the most success, the ones who were most impactful, were the ones who led by example. They were the ones who really were diligent and not just telling people how to solve the issue, but showing them how to solve the issue.
So the reason why I bring that up is I think that there is a very big positive to the way Kawhi Leonard handles himself. He is a very, as we know, monotone, even-keeled, not too up, not too down, mainly just kind of down guy that never really gets, and I think that works. I think it works to an extent. I think being that calm sometimes helps you come back from a 20-point deficit, which they did in game four, and ultimately almost win that game. Now, they failed to do it, but being able to keep that level of calm in all sorts of chaos maybe does generate some sort of positive. I also think, though, to lead to the point of where does this blame go, I think teams take on the qualities of their best player. And sometimes Kawhi Leonard, with the blasé attitude, I think that can be a detriment. When your best guy, your best player, shows up with the same just kind of attitude every single day, sometimes it's a positive. Sometimes you're getting your butt whooped and you know that, hey, he's going to continue to kind of put the nose down and keep going, and ultimately you come storming back. But then other times, like a vast majority of this series, you show up with no energy and there's nobody in that huddle to tell you, let's go. Like, what are we doing? I'm out here doing what I'm supposed to do. What are you guys doing? And sometimes that's needed. And I thought that this was severely lacking for this team when I watched them. And I do think there's times where I don't need him to yell or emote or do anything like over the top. But I do think sometimes you need that emotional leader somewhere. And I don't think Kawhi Leonard is that guy.
No, I don't either. And I do think it comes off as looking like he's lacking energy. But to your point here with James Harden, he has more energy, right? He's a little bit more of the rah-rah guy for them. But Kawhi Leonard is still the best player on the team, and they can kind of fall into that.
Well, I mean, when you were kind of describing his leadership style, I couldn't help but think about Nikola Jokic over at the Denver Nuggets. I'm not saying he and Kawhi have very similar personalities, but Nikola is also a guy that the media and fans look at and they say his attitude's different. He doesn't really seem to love his job. You know, there's that narrative out there where, in reality, Jokic, he doesn't really seem like a rah-rah guy either, but there are moments during games, especially after they fired Malone, where he kind of took control of the huddle. He was telling them what we need to do, and he really took lead. As your time watching the Clippers, Kawhi's never had a moment like that. Kawhi's never been seen at all, even like taking a teammate to the side during a game and, you know, going through something.
No, not that I've seen.
Not once.
And that's like, and even with your point about Jokic, like we can talk about him being the sense of like, you know, like the joke after they won the finals, right? Mm-hmm. When he was like, he's like, I don't even want to go to the parade. Like, I just want to go home, right? Like, that's sort of a deal. But you see it on the court. You see, even in this series, he's trying to draw fouls. He's flopping a little bit. He's kind of barking at officials. He'll go up to an official and start like kind of yelling. He did it multiple times in the series, recently showing some sort of emotion, some sense of urgency. But like with Kawhi, like you show him on the bench and they're down. And again, it could be a positive or a negative. They could be up by 20 and he's just on the bench. They're down by 20 and he's just on the bench. They're up by 3 after they hit a massive 3 to go up in the last 30 seconds and he's just on the bench. But I do think that for a team that lacked the requisite energy at times, I think it's really easy to dunk on James Harden and say, this guy stinks in big moments. Let's make all of our conversations about this. Where the reality is, I think it's fair to at least put some of the blame on Kawhi Leonard, who, by the way, was a team worst minus 33 in that game on Saturday, right? And say, where is this leadership coming from? Because as you being the best player, like, dude, we're probably going to look to you, and they need that at some point. I don't know, maybe I'm out of pocket, but I feel like that's a fair criticism.
The toughest part is, where do they go from here? Because it's like, so if he's not that type of leader, and then, you know, they let Paul George go, it didn't work out, and you kind of wanted to see how he was in a role of sharing that leadership, I guess you could say. And now what do you do? What do you do if you were...
You literally have no option but run it back. Because, no, I mean, you're not trading Kawhi because nobody's going to trade for him. He had a great year, but he still played less than 40 games. And, you know, he's Kawhi. You just don't know what the health is. You're not trading James Harden. Nobody's going to take that contract and what he's going to be worth. The, in theory, piece that you have to trade is Ivica Zubac, which is, he's untouchable. You want to keep him. He's incredible. There's nothing really you're doing.
Wow.
So all they're going to do is run it back and hope that next year maybe is a little bit better. So maybe that's going to be the case. Maybe Kawhi plays 60 games next year and they're back in the postseason and they're great, but they don't really have that much.
And what about what about Ty Lue? You think how did you feel like his coaching was this series, and do you think he's going to be able to add any extra oomph for them for the next season when they get going if they can't make any big additions?
I think Ty Lue's a pretty good coach, but I also think that this team was unlocked because they went and got Jeff Van Gundy, and Van Gundy's defensive prowess was really shining through throughout the postseason. Now, I don't think Van Gundy's going to go anywhere, so he's probably going to stay on staff, which is going to be very good for them. But I think Lue's fine. I think Lue's a really good coach. But I just, this team's kind of stuck. And look, I still think they can be good, so I don't want to, like, they're screwed. They can still win a playoff series. They can, you know, whatever. I think there's a very firm ceiling. And I also think that maybe something needs to change with the way that they lead, because, Alex, to your point, it is not a very pretty place to be if James Harden is your, like, main emotional leader.
Yeah.
They can't be where you are as a team.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
I don't really appreciate this conversation happening behind the scenes here.
You really do appreciate or don't?
No, I don't. I don't appreciate this. I don't appreciate the fact that we're laughing at my pain. They're really, like, it sucks. It's not fun being a sports fan of sorts.
It's really not.
Like, it must be nice to root for a team that's, like, genuinely good.
I can tell you.
I keep going back to...
You can't. I can.
Okay, hold on. Now I need questions answered. First off, Griffin, what are your allegiances?
My one big allegiance is to the team in Chicago, the Chicago Bears.
Okay, all right. So you're up there.
It's self-explanatory why I'm a pretty miserable person.
Yeah. I still remember... thinking, man, watching Devin Hester run that kickback in the Super Bowl, being like, dang, dude, the Colts are going to lose this. This sucks. They did not. And I think that's like the peak since
the last
few years.
Yeah, it was that play where I, you know, made the decision of who was going to be my sports team that ruins my life.
For you, wait, so what do you, I don't know much about. What?
I don't really have any teams. That's the.
Oh, you're one of those, like, I'm a cold, calculated sports gambler. I have no allegiances, only to the numbers.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
It's ridiculous. You could do both. You could do both.
Except for the Golden Knights. I can't claim the Golden Knights, but
oh,
and you
what
can
a pampered
do both.
Existence.
I don't know. I root for players more or less. Like, I'd like to see Lamar Jackson win a Super Bowl, so I've been rooting for the Ravens for the last couple of years.
But like, you don't feel
no
tangible pain when Lamar Jackson loses. You don't feel that in your body.
This year I did a little bit to the Bills. That was a little rough. I thought they would be the team to take out the Chiefs too, so I'm also...
My children saw me cry for the first time. No, I'm just kidding.
But yours is brutal with the Angels and...
Yeah. Well, I keep going back to... I saw this video not many months ago. So it was after Luka got traded. This kid is probably 7 or 8 years old. He's sitting in a living room, a very... we'll say, nice living room. So we know what kind of background the kid's already from. He's wearing a Dodgers jersey, of course. And then his father or his brother is filming him and going, hey, guess what? The Lakers just got Luka Doncic. And the kid's like, what? And he's screaming and he's kicking. And all I felt was pure hatred for that child. Can you imagine that existence? Being a Dodgers, Lakers fan, having Ohtani, winning the World Series the way that they're going to be great forever, and then you just fall ass backwards into Luka Doncic at the trade deadline as well. And this kid knows nothing but that. Nothing but that existence. That is what that child knows.
I don't think that kid will ever have a chance at being a big figure in sports media because he's got too much good to talk about.
That's a good point. I feel like if you were to poll just general sports media people, a lot of fans of really crappy teams because we have to be able to complain.
You have to be able to say why your life's so hard. You got to make it entertaining. You got to be like, you got to tell them why every little detail of your team's existence ruins your day to day.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have something to talk about.
I mean, that's literally all Chicago sports radio is. It's just complaining.
Oh, it's my favorite. It's my favorite to listen to outside of course, ESPN Las Vegas.
Of course.
Yeah. I love listening to the Chicago sports talk. It is so, what's the right word? toxic and down.
Yeah.
It's very toxic and down.
Because, like, the East Coast stuff, especially, like, you know, Boston, like, that just rings hollow. When you're, like, when you're complaining, like, screw you, okay? You know? Like, the New York sports talk I kind of get because, despite the narrative around New York, actually has not had a lot of success in terms of these major sports outside of the Giants. So, like, that sports talk, I kind of get it. It is kind of funny when you're, like, complaining Jazz Chisholm didn't leg out, like, a ground out or whatever it was, and it's, you know, like, June 26th and we're complaining about that or whatever it is.
I mean, the Bears have a great offseason like they do, and yet I still somehow am able to find content and videos of them saying, why are we going tight end with the first pick, and why are we not going Tyler Warren,
yeah,
the guy who's supposed to be the number one tight end in this draft class? Like, it's those little details.
I'll take that, though. Colts fan.
Yeah, you like Tyler Warren better?
Yeah.
Hey, you guys got a good one? Just need somebody to get him the ball, but...
it's going to be fun. by the way, those White Sox Bulls unis were really nice. Did you see those?
I did not see
them. Oh, well, I'll pull those up for you. They had the White Sox had some Chicago Bulls alternates. They were great.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling, presented by Jackson's Bar and Grill, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, let's get some of the NBA. We do have a game currently underway right now. Knicks and Celtics tied at 29 apiece with about 10 minutes left to go in the second. Usually I'm on in this spot on Mondays, but first off, now I can come on the actual show, which is a good thing. And second, I figured let's get somebody smarter to talk about the NBA than I do. Zach Cohen, one of my cohorts over at the Vegas Stats and Information Network, does a great job writing up on the website at VSiN.com as well, is with us here. Zach, we appreciate it. So we do a lot of the hardcore sports betting stuff at VSiN. We get that. But I need your actual NBA like fandom and following for this topic. I was going on a little bit of a tangent earlier. I put a lot of the blame on the Clippers' loss on the lack of emotional leadership of Kawhi Leonard. Did I miss the mark? I feel like Kawhi deserves some criticism.
Kawhi definitely deserves some criticism. Honestly, you could throw blame in a lot of different directions. Like, I know everybody really wanted to jump on James Harden, but Kawhi didn't play all that well. I don't think Norman Powell played well. The only person that I thought really showed up was Ivica Zubac, who did a really good job on Nikola Jokic in the series, had his moments offensively. I believe you told me in a text that he's untouchable. I don't know if I agree with that.
No.
But it was a really, you know, a really tough loss.
No. You cannot touch him. He is untouchable. He, I think, package-wise, is on par with Giannis Antetokounmpo. I want 5 first-round picks for Ivica Zubac.
Zach, I have a question for you with the game going on right now, Knicks and Celtics. I feel like the Knicks were pretty fortunate to win that series against the Pistons. Now they're up against it here with Boston. How many games do you think we're going to get in this series, and do the Knicks have a chance to upset the Celtics?
I think it's going to be 5 or less. I completely agree with you. I thought that they were really fortunate to get out of there, especially in 6 games. There was just so many close games in that series. There was obviously the one where Tim Hardaway Jr. was fouled in the corner, and that wasn't called. That would have probably been a Pistons win. I really think that thing should have gone 7, and I think if the Pistons were a little bit more experienced and composed, they probably could have won that series. I think this is a New York team that really has some problems defensively between Brunson and Cat. Those are 2 guys that can be exploited, and offensively, it's just been a really rough go outside of the Brunson ISO ball stuff. They have not been getting consistent performances out of pretty much anybody else, and the offense isn't designed in a way that really allows those guys to thrive. So this is a really tough matchup for them with a Boston team that's obviously a defending champion and I think going to be playing angry after a pretty lackluster performance against Orlando.
To the point of New York's offense, I do have drafted, that is 90% done for some reason, a Celtics and Knicks series preview in my Google Docs. And one of the points that I had made, and had I had published it, was that the ISO rate has gone up for the Knicks. The assist rate has gone way down. Karl Anthony Towns, his usage rate went way down against the Pistons. Why do you think that happened in that series?
I just don't think that they really have anything to go to outside of the Brunson ball. I think that, you know, when they acquired Karl Anthony Towns, everybody assumed they would run a lot of Brunson Cat pick and rolls because Cat is one of the best shooting bigs in NBA history and maybe the best if you ask him. He's the perfect pick and pop player for Brunson. They just never really worked it into the offense as consistently as they should have. I don't think that they have done enough with OG Anunoby or Mikal Bridges either. When Brunson was out, with an ankle sprain. Adonobi went absolutely crazy as the number one option for them as a scorer. Usually that's the type of thing that when Brunson comes back, you hope that you keep going and find ways to get Adonobi involved. That went away completely the second Brunson came back on the floor. This is what they do. They just give the ball to Brunson as often as possible and hope that he can win them the game. And I don't think that their defense is good enough for that.
If they lose this series in five or four games, is Tibbs fired?
I think so. I think that he did a really bad job in that Pistons series, and it's going to be really hard for them to make upgrades, you know, throughout this roster. I believe they do have that higher mid-level exception, which they got because they ducked below the second apron in the offseason. But it's going to be hard to make this, you know, a much better team without making some real changes. I'm really keeping my eye on Dan Hurley here. I know I'm kind of on an island in thinking that, but I thought that he really was interested in that Lakers job and just didn't want to leave the East Coast. The Knicks feel like a dream job for him.
Ooh, that'd be very interesting. Let's go to the other game one on the board coming up here in just a couple hours. I've heard JVT call it the West, the OKC Invitational. Right. They are hosting the Denver Nuggets, who did win that game set against the Clippers. 10-point favorite. I mean, they've been a covering machine. You like anything in this one with the Denver, just a one-day rest for them?
The only thing I have in this game is Russell Westbrook to go over 20.5 points, rebounds, and assists. And the reason I have that is because I think that the Nuggets, coming off just one day of rest after that last series, really aren't going to be able to kind of devote a full game plan to this one. So I'm kind of thinking they're going to lean into, you know, Westbrook's ability to just, you know, bring energy to a game and just kind of be a spark plug on offense. And I think we saw Westbrook play really well in that last series. He went over this point, rebounds, and assist total in the final three games in that one, and obviously played a really big role in winning that game seven. He also averaged 26.4 combined points, rebounds, and assists in four meetings with the Thunder during the regular season. So I thought this number was a little low. It wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't get it because this is a blowout, but it feels worth playing.
Overall, with this series, I think it could be quick. I think the Thunder have the potential to sweep them. What do you make of Denver's chances overall?
Yeah, this is another one where I took the Thunder minus 2.5 games. I honestly think three of these series are going to be pretty quick. With the Celtics being one that I expect to win in five, I think the Thunder win in five or less, and I think the Timberwolves have the potential to win in five or less. Maybe that's more likely to go to a game six just because, you know, the Warriors do have Steph Curry, Jimmy Butler, and Draymond Green. That has to count for something. But I do think these are some lopsided series, and the only one I really think is going to be close is that Pacers series.
And off to a good start there with the Pacers stealing game one. Anything in this one betting-wise? Did you take Pacers plus 1.5 in the series or anything?
I took Pacers plus 2.5 before it started at minus 144, so I felt really good about game one going their way. I did not really expect that one, although I guess I felt a little bit better about it once the Darius Garland news came out. They have a really ugly injury report for game two also, and I said to JVT earlier today, I think this is, it's really hard to lay off them at plus 9.5 if you can find that number. It is out. I would be looking to jump on that. Kenny Atkinson mentioned a few players as questionable today. Those players, they might not play. He said that he views questionable and doubtful as the same thing, which is a weird statement. But if you're taking that at face value, that means that they're going to be without some starters in that game too.
Or that they're really questionable.
Yeah, that's true also.
I mean, I couldn't stand that answer. When you sent it, I was like, what are you talking about? I looked it up. Probably a little gamesmanship on the side of the now crowned Coach of the Year, by the way. He was named Coach of the Year here today, Kenny Atkinson. Zach Cohen with us. Again, VSiN.com. You can check out his work up there. Follow him on Twitter, at BettingOnX. All right, speaking of coaching, really quickly, bringing this back to Minnesota and Golden State, what did you make of Steve Kerr's coaching job in that series against Houston?
I thought it was strange. I mean, the fact that he landed on the Buddy Hield lineup in game seven and not earlier was a little odd to me. I also thought the Quinton Post just looked really unplayable at times, especially on the defensive end. I know he gives them a little something as a stretch big, but he really, you know, played them for a very long time. It took him a while to figure some things out, and they ultimately landed on something that worked. They won that game seven. Good for them. But I do think that Chris Finch is a really good coach and is going to either, you know, hold his own in that matchup or win it by a pretty significant margin. I think Minnesota has just been pulling all the right strings for maybe 4 or 5 months now.
Yeah. The reason why I bring that up, and you kind of hit on it, I think that Steve Kerr was very lucky that they made it out of that series, that that was going to be an all-time exercise of arrogance. The fact that they willingly quit in that game five and were like, that will take care of it back at home, and were very surprised when they got popped in the mouth in game six. And I think there's a chance. The way I put it is he just doesn't have that many levers to pull with this roster and the way that it's constructed. He's completely mishandled and killed the confidence of Jonathan Kuminga. And I think that's a big reason why this could be a short series. Outside of the roster issues and the advantages that you have with the personnel, I think Kerr has actually kind of taken a step back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, like, I put this in my VSiN.com series preview. Like, a lot of people made a lot of that Şengün and Steven Adams, you know, double big combo, just destroying the Warriors. And I know it's not quite as big, but Randall and Gobert are going to be able to do a lot of the same things. It's just like, you know, when you have a power forward that is as big as another team's center, there's going to be a lot of problems, especially when Randall was defending the way that he was in that Lakers series. Like, they're not going to be able to kind of just play him off the floor when he has that good of a motor on the defensive end. So I think we're going to see Randall and Gobert just kind of dominate the offensive glass. And I don't know what they're going to do matchup-wise there. Are they going to put Green on Gobert? I mean, that would be really interesting given their history, but it would also mean that Gobert is going to have some opportunities to finish at the basket very easily the way he did against Los Angeles. And if they do put Green on Randall instead, that's going to be even easier for him to score on the Butler or something. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, so some would say that maybe a monster has woken up in Rudy Gobert. Zach Cohen with us at Betting on X. All right, let me ask you this. You alluded to it when you talked about Indiana and Cleveland. For our audience, the zigzag theory has been one that old school handicappers love, and if you've been playing it, you've been making out like a bandit. But some of these numbers, explain to our audience a little bit of what we've seen with some of these numbers on these teams that lose. And, like, Zach, I'm going to get my face kicked in. I think I'm going to keep playing against this. This is stupid, some of these massive swings you're seeing.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. I don't understand it. It has been working, and I guess there's a logic in it that I don't quite understand. Like, I keep coming back to the point that you can think the Cavaliers need to win game two. They absolutely do. But why do they need to win the game by 10 or more points? I don't understand that. Like, the Pacers also want to win that game. They're not just going to give it away for no reason. Rick Carlisle is a really good motivational coach, a really good X's and O's coach. Like, he's going to be drilling in the importance that, you know, if you go in there and steal game two, you win the series. So I just don't see Indiana rolling over because Cleveland needs it. So I don't really see this being a game that should have a spread of, you know, over almost 10, especially with some guys banged up. And I don't see why it's moved from, you know, 8 to 10 when we just saw Indiana beat them on their home court.
All right, Zach, we appreciate a couple minutes, man. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Zach Cohen again, my colleague over at VSiN. You can find the work up at VSiN.com.
And you've been tracking this zigzag, right?
I think it was 22-11 ATS, the straight up loser in the next game.
I heard you on the radio actually, and it was 20-10 at that point. I couldn't believe it.
Because for audience, what's crazy about it, and Zach was alluding to it there, it's not just the fact that the straight up loser is covering the next game; they're covering numbers that are massive.
Right.
You know, you're looking at these numbers where it's up 2 points from where it should be. It doesn't matter. They're just coming in and taking care of business and moving on to the next. And that, to me, is the crazy part where I'll find myself pushing back. You know, Lakers close as 4.5-point favorites in game one. They don't cover. They close as 6.5-point favorites in game two. No injury, nothing. It's just that they lost. So we got to pump this up 2 points, and they win going away. And they cover that number, no problem. And that's just one example of the many that we've seen. And I'm somebody, you know, you have your numbers too. But, like, I think I told this to you guys when we talked about it the first time, which was, like, your numbers should be pretty static. Unless there's an injury, this is what you should be doing. And yet, I've bet against it plenty of times, and I've gotten my face kicked in. But I'm going to keep doing it. You have to. Like, to me, at least, you have to.
Well, is there something with the NBA of guys kind of just throwing in the towel and like, okay, we'll go back to the next game? Like, college basketball, you don't see that. You see them fouling down to the very last second.
Right. I mean, because that's obviously single elimination. You don't have anywhere to
right.
go. There is something to be said of, hey, we have one more game left. We have three more games left. We're willing to, like, move on to the next, like the Warriors did. But to still cover some of those willingly inflated numbers and to be playing into them, I just don't really understand at all how there's any value in it, but it continues to happen. So we'll see. It's a big number for an injured Cavaliers team here in game two, but I'm going to continue to kind of push back on that.